in trouble.
It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast on the Big Lead. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel. We're joined by second-time guest Pat McAfee. Pat is made available on behalf of Natty Light, who has a new beer, Natterdays, which is a strawberry lemonade light beer. Pat, how did you get involved with this promotion?
Ryan, thanks for having me on the show again. This is awesome. Two times. I feel like a regular here, and it's an honor to be that with you, Ryan. I, in natural light, have a history. I went to West Virginia University, which is a natural light university. So Natty and I had a lot of great times together while I was in college. And then as I've moved forward, we've had deals in the past together where I've promoted the product because I love it so much. And then when Natural Light approached me with this Natterdays concept with a new beer, a deliciously refreshing style beer from your friends at Natural Light, and they kind of wanted to launch it around this idea that any day could be a Natterday. Any day could be the greatest day of your life, and when a day becomes a day is basically how they sold it to me, and I was excited. I was on board with it. I said I wanted to try it out first. If it tasted good at all, I'm in, and then I got a chance to try it, and it's deliciously refreshing new style of beer from Natural Light, and their message is that kind of every day could be the greatest day of all time, and I was hook, line, and sinker all in. They asked me if I would record a story for them for them to animate, and then let's roll it out, and it's been awesome, and I am so excited about it all.
Nice. And so there's a commercial that was released on YouTube and on your Twitter account telling an epic Natterday story with the sheriff, who I think everybody watching that knows is Peyton Manning. I don't want to spoil the ending of that, so instead I want to direct this towards the future. The days are about to get longer, warmer. There's going to be a lot of Natterdays coming up in the spring and summer. What is the ideal Natterday for you this summer? Where are you? Who are you with? And what are you doing?
I think that's an incredible question. I think that's the beautiful thing about a Natterday, though. You never know what it's going to be. That day for me that is detailed in the animation was a day where I was just going to head home. I was just going to keep to myself. And then all of a sudden, I get asked to go somewhere, one thing leads to another, and it's like the greatest day of my entire life. And that's kind of what a Natterday is. It's good people, good vibes, good energy, and there could potentially be the greatest day of your life. You never know when it's coming. For me, this spring and summer, a couple of Natterdays are going to taste delicious when the sun's out there by my pool. I'm recently engaged, so my lady's there. We're cooking out. Maybe a couple people show up and play some music and perform and have a good time. Literally, any day to become the Natterday, to become the greatest day. And you just gotta have that mindset that the only difference between your birthday and every other day, the only difference between the greatest day and the worst day of your life is your mindset. That's what a Natterday is, my brother.
Thank you. By the way, congrats on your engagement. So I wanted to switch gears to your new contract with WWE. That was announced a couple weeks ago. Now that you're signed for a couple years, what do you see your role as being there?
It's very interesting me stepping into these worlds, whether it's with a sports network or with the WWE. I'm kind of a different animal when it comes to everything. I have my own small business I'm operating. I got my own crew of editors and content creators. So when I sat down with the WWE for the first time, the thought was, okay, let's get this guy on an NXT TakeOver pre-show. Let's see how he does. Michael Cole brought me in there. So, so nice of him. And then as we continued to meet each other and chit-chat with each other and learn more about each other, I've been a fan since I was a kid. So I knew a lot about the WWE and its history and how it works and things like that. And Michael Cole started learning about me. It kind of blossomed into this agreement where they just kind of want to get me in the door. So right now I'm commentating, making some digital content for them. Just going to be on the microphone a little bit and then kind of see where it goes. But it's a very limitless opportunity with the WWE. And however I can continue to create good content for them and keep making magic for them, we'll see what happens. But there's no limit on this deal. And I think that's probably the best part of it all is we both kind of see it as a beginning of a relationship, and let's see what we can do and figure out in the world that we live in today, because I can't be a full-time WWE guy because I have a business I have to run. I have a lot of things going on, but they definitely want to have a partnership. So that's kind of where we're at. We're working through it, and I'm excited to see what all entails here, like 10 years down the road, see what all has happened.
Could you see yourself ever wrestling in a match?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if I'm anywhere near tough enough. I don't know if I'm anywhere near wanting to get in shape enough at this point in my life. But, I mean, I've been saying this since I was a child. I think I'm supposed to be a sports entertainer. I mean, I'm a pretty athletic dude. I'm a stand-up comedian. You put those two things together, that's basically sports entertainment. So the opportunity to get into the greatest sports entertainment company on earth, which is WWE, was cool. But I am not certain that I could get my body in good enough shape to do what those women and men do inside the ring every single night. It's absolutely incredible. But that dream since I'm a kid is definitely still there.
You and I are about 8 months apart in age, and I also grew up a big wrestling fan. So I think we have really the same, or at least a similar frame of reference to it. And that's just got to be unbelievable for you to be on NXT, which I think all wrestling fans know is Triple H's baby, and have him not only know who you are, but appreciate what you bring to the table and want to make content with you. What's that like for you?
You're 100% right. I obviously grew up a huge fan of Triple H, D-Generation X. I was in the Attitude Era just like you, Stone Cold, The Rock, you name it. The Monday Night Wars. I mean, I was very lucky to grow up in that time. And then once I met Triple H, right, and I shake his hand and Michael Cole, like, introduced it to him, I almost poop my face. You know, I almost poop my face. I was very... I don't get nervous around people. I don't get starstruck much. But it was just so crazy to see this human who is such a huge part of my life growing up. Now he's a businessman. Now he's talking to me about my ideas and what I think will work. And he's just such an incredible businessman. He's an incredible, incredibly relatable human too. And he gets the most out of the people that he works with. I think that's why you're seeing so much success with NXT. His brain is next level when it comes to everything, and chatting with him, and I don't want to say befriending him because I don't think he would ever say we're friends, although it would be cool if that slips out of his mouth one time. It's been really, really awesome just getting to work with him and watch his brain work, and hopefully he'll be saying the same thing like in a few years down the road with me. But right now I just try to be all ears, learn as much as possible from them, and hopefully not piss them off, man.
Is there any match or story that really sticks out from your time as an NXT broadcaster that was just like next level and you can't believe you got to watch it and react to it live?
I think everything that happens down at NXT is insane. The way they tell the stories, the in-ring competition, the build-up, it's just, and also the women and men down at NXT, they are willing to do anything to steal a show. What Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa put themselves through last year was insane at the takeovers. Then you watch like Ricochet come in and literally do Cirque du Soleil stuff around the ring. And Adam Cole and the Undisputed Era, the way they can build a buzz. And Shayna Baszler, who's a real-life badass. And Kairi Sane, who's ending. There's just so much talent at NXT. It gives me nothing but just alley-oops for me to dunk on and talk about. It's the greatest brand in sports entertainment, and I enjoy the hell out of speaking about it.
I don't think you're going to give me a straight answer on this, but I got to ask. Obviously, you're a former football player. You're working with WWE. Vince McMahon is launching a football league. If the terms are right, do you see yourself as being a big broadcaster for the XFL when it launches next season?
I don't think that is that difficult of a question. I think that would be, you're a smart guy, Ryan. I could tell you're a smart guy. That is a question that anybody should ask. And to be honest, the AAFL offered me a broadcasting deal literally a day after I signed my deal with the WWE. And I saw it as a huge opportunity. I was so thankful and grateful to the AAFL for offering me. But I very much understood that the company that I just signed with is also going to be launching their own league. So I have not been told by anybody that I'll be broadcasting for the XFL. I have not been told by anybody if I'll be calling NFL games again. I've been kind of kept in the dark about all that. But I definitely understand that the opportunities are hopefully going to be there. And when they do, hopefully I can add something to the game or to the league, whichever one it is that I'm speaking into a microphone for.
For a while now, you've had a radio show or a podcast, first on the Barstool channel, now on your own. And you're also, you do these hits on some of the debate shows, whether that's on ESPN or Fox. How difficult is a transition for you to make from when you're going and having these long form, extemporaneous conversations on radio or podcast to having to distill everything into very quick, concise sound bites on television?
That's such a good question. It is like mental gymkhana when I get on there. It's interesting. Some things I'm not good at. I'm not great at the debating stuff. I don't enjoy debating. I respect everybody's opinion, even if I disagree with it. And to be honest, you're not going to find enough energy in me to make you feel bad about your opinion. So I'm not great at the debate stuff. But condensing an opinion into a 30-second bit, soundbite, clip type thing, it is a little bit difficult for me. So I don't do much preparation for most things. And when I get into those ESPN shows or to the Fox stuff, it is a whole different animal for me where I find myself doing a little bit more homework so that I don't, you know, push them up to a break because there's somebody counting down in your ear, like you have 10 seconds, 5 seconds, like that type of stuff. But it is definitely a mental hurdle that you have to get through because whenever I'm just wide open on my podcast, who knows what we're going to get to. Whenever you're on TV, though, you got to get to it now and get to it quick or it's a completely wasted segment. It's just a little bit of a different brain exercise for me, and I enjoy the workout, to be honest.
You also got the opportunity to call an NFL game between the Packers and the Lions last season. And you got extremely excited for the Matt Prater touchdown pass. Was that something you had any idea was coming? Like, did the coaches give you a heads up on it in production meetings? Or were you just totally shocked that they ran that play at that time?
I don't think NFL coaches would tell any broadcasters if they have a fake coming because broadcasters by nature have large mouths. So I got no heads up there, although I am friends with Matt Prater, Sam Martin, and the man Fitz, who was running their special teams at the time. I am friends with all three of those. They told me nothing. And, once I saw it start to cook up, even when I saw the end go ahead and motion over to the sideline, I kind of knew what was happening. The heart started fluttering and pounding. The energy just started coming through the booth there in Lambeau. I was just so naturally excited. And to be honest, after watching the NFL now since I've retired for 2 years, I never really watched live games that much. I watched a lot of film. I would watch Monday Night Football, but it'd be in the background. I wouldn't really pay attention. Now every single week I'm glued into the TV for basically every single show. In listening to the commentators, I thought there was always something missing, right? And when Tony Romo came in and had a little bit of energy, everybody loved him. That's because all the other commentators are so stiff. Like, football is a game, the greatest game on earth. It's to be enjoyed. It's a celebration. It's two cities taking each other on. It's supposed to be fun. That's what it is. It's not rocket science. It's not surgery. So in my head, that epitome that kind of epitomized all in one moment there, that fake field goal, where the natural reaction of mine was hopefully somebody else is at home. And if not, I hope I could bring a little energy to something that they don't normally get a lot of energy, which is fourth down. So for me, I almost lost my mind, almost had a heart attack. But I also like to think I added something to a game that was pretty dry in week 17 in Lambeau.
I agree with you in terms of welcoming your enthusiasm. Now, I don't want to draw you into a heated debate, but we have a very strong difference opinion based on your broadcasting of that game of Matt Patricia. Now, I'm a Packers fan, so I hope the Lions hold on to him forever, but I don't think that he had them on as good of course as you seem to think that he had them on towards the end of the season. What was it that gives you the belief that he is the right person for that job?
I think what it is this. Anybody that leaves the New England regime is attempting to copy what's happening in the New England regime, right? And that's obviously you should, if that's where Matt Patricia was there for over a decade. It's the greatest dynasty in the history of football, probably will be the greatest dynasty ever in the history of football when it's all said and done with the Patriots. And they have a certain way about it. It's the Patriot way. It's a real thing. It's fundamentals. It's boring. It's hardworking. It's this. It's that. And if you see it like Josh McDaniels try to do it in Denver, old Cousy try to do it in Cleveland, it can be met with some resistance at the beginning because, A, it's a very different style of thing. Sometimes coaches have different strokes for different folks, different coaches. It's just the way it is. So I think what he's trying to do is come in there and establish a foundation of the Patriot way with more fundamentals and more emphasis on technique and film and make it not maybe as fun as it used to be. So I think if they get the right cast of characters in there and people that can buy into his vision, obviously it can be successful. But it's just all about whether or not that happens. And if it doesn't happen quickly, he'll be fired and we'll never know if it would have worked to begin with.
Well, that's true. And I agree with you. He is trying to establish something, but he was taking over a team that had gone 9-7 each of the past two seasons. Obviously, that wasn't satisfactory to Lions brass, but I don't know. The way that I know I'm a media guy and I stick up for other media guys. If you're Bill Belichick and you win Super Bowls and you want to treat them like ants, I don't have to love it, but your record speaks for itself. I have an issue with Matt Patricia doing it before he's established a level of success as the person in charge.
This is literally what happens with every person that leaves the Patriot way, though. Belichick's resume warrants him to act however the hell he wants. It's just kind of the way it is. But if you look at anybody that has left the Patriots and has tried to become a head coach, they all have tried to do the same thing, and it hasn't really found much success. The Belichick coaching tree is not a very successful one when it comes to head coaches. Who knows if it'll happen in Detroit? Possibly. I have no idea. But I do know that once Aaron Rodgers got hurt there in week 17 on like the second play of the game, they were in deep trouble. And that Lions team has now beat the Packers, I think, 4 out of the last 5 or 3 out of the last 4 or something like that. I mean, that NFC North could be tough there for a while for you Packers fans, although Aaron Rodgers is my favorite football player on earth.
Switching to a team that's on a very positive trajectory, at least by all appearances, how impressed are you with how quickly Chris Ballard has been able to turn things around from their previous regime, which you are on the record of not being totally fond of?
Yeah, I think it was nice that Chris Ballard came in and kind of switched things up. I had an incredible run with the Indianapolis Colts. Very honored and lucky to be there. We had a lot of fun. A lot of wins early, not as much there towards the end with Andrew Luck being hurt. Healthy Andrew Luck comes back, brand new GM, taking shots on a bunch of young guys, had some extra cap space, decided to pocket it. They go 1-5, a lot of question marks early in the year. Then something happened. That culture kicked in that Ballard wanted to build. Darius Leonard became a monster. Quentin Nelson started taking over games at the offensive line. T.Y. Hilton did his same damn thing that he always does. And Andrew Luck was all the way back and comfortable with Frank Reich. I think the Colts are in an incredible spot. They built a foundation and a culture through some tough times, which means that it's a thick one. That 1-5 is a very tough start for anybody. And now their young players got a lot of confidence. They got some playoff experience, albeit a loss. And now they got $100-some million to spend. I think the Colts are in a very, very good spot for at least the next 5 to 10 years. I'm excited to see what Chris Ballard decides to do with his free agency money. And he'll be on my show on Thursday. And I am absolutely going to ask him, because there's some big-time players that are out on the market right now. And I think if you pick up 1 to 2 of them, you become a Super Bowl contender immediately, especially if you got a good poacher like the Colts seem to have.
Yeah, see if you can get him to confirm on the record what his price would be for Le'Veon Bell.
Believe me, this, before the season started at training camp, we were live from the Colts training camp, and he came and did an interview. And that was when Le'Veon Bell was just starting to like all the Colts images on the NFL and put emojis in the comments. Everybody on earth, everybody on earth thought Le'Veon Bell was coming back to the Steelers, but I was pitching heavily that he wanted to be a Colt strictly off his social media moves. So Chris Ballard comes on, and I go, are you going to sign Le'Veon Bell or not? Right? This is before preseason. He kind of laughs it off, and then he gave me an answer about how he wants to build the culture first. He doesn't want to bring in any vets yet until the culture is established within the locker room, because you don't want vets to come in and them set the tone on how the team handles. You want the team to already be set how workouts go, how meetings go, how everybody takes care of the locker room, how people take care of each other. You want that all set in stone before you bring somebody into that culture. And I think that is what happened last year. They set the good foundation. Now they can bring in people from outside that are superstars, and they can just fit right in and kind of see the way the Colts do things. And they should have confidence, too, because the resume says their team is good. But I will be excited, and I will definitely press him on Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, amongst other people that are potentially free agents.
You told what I think is your best Peyton Manning story, or I would at least assume it is, in the Natterday commercial. What's your second best Peyton Manning story?
There's a lot of them. I mean, just being teammates with that guy and watching him work, it was an honor, man. It truly was. The guy was literally first in, last out, a robot, extra work, extra effort, but he was also a good teammate, man. The fact that he invited me on that trip and that Natterday story before even knowing who I was is just such a picture-perfect thing of what he was. He was such a good teammate. He was a hard worker, and we had some great times together. I mean, that's
I want specifics on those great times. Peyton Manning's a hard worker.
I was very lucky to get to hang out with him. What'd you say?
I said we all know Peyton Manning's a hard worker. I want to hear about the debauchery.
Yeah, I bet you do. And there's a great Natterday story that tells that right now, which is announcing the debut of your favorite new beer, Natterdays from Natural Light.
I can't get you to break the omerta on this one, can I?
I think it's going to be tough. I mean, there's a couple good ones. I mean, he's honestly just such a good dude. The whole family, too, by the way. I mean, I've had red wine with Archie Manning. I got a chance to hang out with Eli Manning. I've met Cooper and Cupper and the family. I mean, the Manning family are just good people, and I was lucky to be in the NFL alongside them.
How does Adam Vinatieri do what he does?
He's the most competitive human I've ever met.
It's just miraculous that at this age, he's old and gray looking, and I know he had the misses in the playoffs, but it's unbelievable that this run has continued for this long. He's honestly one of the most impressive athletes of our lifetime, not just kickers, athletes of all sports.
Yeah, I agree completely with what you're saying. And also, I think on that missed extra point, there might have been a little bit of a bobble on the snap, or on the hold, I mean. So he definitely had a short miss, though, in playoffs, which you can't do, which Adam Vinatieri doesn't do. But Adam is literally the most competitive human I've ever encountered. It's just, to him, this is just competing with the younger people. It's competing alongside the Colts to hopefully win another Super Bowl. When he's in the weight room, there'll be people half his age lifting, and he wants to keep up with them. He just has that trait, that competitive gene that just makes him want to be a better him tomorrow than he was today. And that's just not on a football field. That's also being a dad and being a husband and stuff like that. He's just, I honestly, I've said this a couple of times, numerous times, getting drafted to the Colts was incredible because I got to become a professional football player and get rich and take care of my family and all that. But I also got to learn from the greatest of all time to ever kick a football, and that's Adam Vinatieri. And it's the little things. It's the not missing a practice day, not sitting out, not resting whenever you're a little bit sore, pushing through because at some point you're going to have to kick when you're tired. The workouts in the weight room mean just as much as on the field. It's everything you can learn from that. And it all revolves around him being the most competitive human I've ever met.
I want to ask you a derivative question about the Natterday story. We'll get you out of here on this. Are you really the type of person that can win $3,500 on one roulette spin and just bounce? You're not making any more bets. You're not pressing. You're out of there. Yeah. Just like that? Really? How do you do that?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I like winning, man. I enjoy winning. Like everybody said, they hate losing, which I respect. I think I hate losing as well. But I love winning. I enjoy it. And if I walk out of there with $3,500 when I walked in with $500, only bet $100 on that spin, I mean, I feel like I beat that casino. That's what I did. And in my head, I'll take the win. I understand people view chips in casinos as fun coupons, and it's not over till you lose them all. Not me. I'm all about beating the casino, getting out of there, and utilizing their house's money to have a great time with my friends. I've always been that way. Now that I gamble on sports, same thing. Like, if I'm up, I'm not scared to go ahead and lower my bets a little bit so I can beat the bookie. I mean, it's just, I enjoy winning a lot, and I view, even whenever I was a kid and I was taking tests, I viewed it as a competition and like a battle between me and the teacher, and I enjoyed beating the teacher by winning the test. It's just how I feel. I like winning. I like celebrating. And most importantly, I enjoy just free money because I have a teammate named Peyton Manning who can predict the future.
All right. Thank you very much for your time, Pat. We really appreciate it. Once again, of course, as we talked about the whole time, Pat was made available on behalf of Natterday, which is the new strawberry lemonade light beer from Natural Light. We look forward to talking to you the next time. Thank you again for all of your time.
Brian, thank you for having me. It's a true honor. And for those listening at home, the strawberry lemonade, it will not be able to replace the incredible taste of Natural Light, the OG Natural Light, but it is a great tag team partner for a beautiful day and a day that could become the best day of your life, which is what Natterday is. Dude, Brian, appreciate you, man.
Thanks again, Pat. Be well. Have a good one.
Familiar touch turns strange.